Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
We are live. It's 7:01 p.m. on the 21st of January. It's Monday night. I'm Dave. This is the Hour of Truth, and what a show we have tonight. We've got Bob Parker here. You remember we spent an hour with Bob back during the primaries. Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Dave. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you again. So laying a little history here. We talked to you back during the primary. Got a pretty good
right.
feel for it, for what you are and who you are. And we're going to do that again tonight for the folks that are listening. If you folks want to get in on the conversation, it's 347-677-1835. Give us a call and talk to Bob. But laying a little history here, you ran in a primary against Joanne Emerson, and she won.
Right.
Went on to win the election, and not 2 weeks later, surprisingly, announced that that she was going to resign, didn't she?
She's going to step down, which I think she's going to step down tomorrow, I believe.
Yep, that's what I understand. She waited for the president to get inaugurated, I see. But anyway, yeah, so it's been rumored that she knew, of course, pre-primary even, that this was going to come up. I haven't even made any attempt to verify those rumors. I've no doubt about it. Because now the next representative for Missouri 8 to Washington, D.C. is going to be selected by a very closed circle of Republicans.
Right.
Now, that just doesn't seem right to a lot of people in the grassroots. And a lot of people in the grassroots have rallied behind the person who was their favorite candidate in the primary, and that is you.
Right.
Tell us how you feel about this to start with, and that you really, really want this job.
Well, I guess I'll start back at the big, I guess kind of the beginning.
Yeah.
I've ran the last two election cycles in 2010 and 2012, and I got about 35% of the vote. I think the last time was 33%. They took in a more liberal area up in Jefferson County, got a little closer to St. Louis as the district lines changed. But anyway, about, a little over a third of the vote. And, we've got, contacts all over the 30 counties in the 8th district and a lot of great people, a lot of patriots and Tea Party people and more mainstream type Republican people that are disappointed that we're not following the Constitution anymore. So, got a lot of support, but anyway, Mrs. Emerson, refused to ever debate me, and the media ever, refused to ever cover my race to any extent. So, it's been tough, but I ran, my approach to running this race was not to try to, sell my soul to people that pull the strings behind the scenes, but to take my message to the grassroots, take it to the people, and have them help me to take back the seat, for the people. And, No, we were successful in many ways on that. We weren't able to win that vote, but because of all the hard work that everyone did in this race, educating people about, you know, the voting record of Mrs. Emerson and that it truly wasn't a conservative record, I think that it became too problematic for Mrs. Emerson to stay in that office because she, you know, probably nobody, at least outside of the inner circle, knows how she's been affected by this race better than I do because, you know, a couple of hundred thousand flyers with her voting record, you know, supporting embryonic stem cell research with taxpayer money and the bailouts that she's voted for and all the earmarks and, you know, married to a lobbyist and, you know, her daughters are lobbyists and all those. We just talked about those facts, and it became very hard for her, I think. I mean, in my opinion, take it for what it's worth, but in my opinion, it was time for her to move on, even though she could, you know, continue to win this election. It wasn't a fun place to hang out in the 8th District anymore.
And she is leaving to become, in effect, another lobbyist.
Yeah, to become, you know, she was a lobbyist before she got into Congress and married, you know, Bill Emerson. And so, you know, she, her family, well, you know, her daughters are lobbyists and her husband's a lobbyist. And she was a lobbyist before she got into Congress. So now she's, you know, basically going back into lobbying and going to make, you know, close to a couple million dollars a year doing that. So it's a pretty good gig for her to do. I mean, it's, you know, and I've heard a lot of disappointment around the 8th District by people that somebody would run for office and now leave that, you know, leave our district without representation for several months while the committees are choosing another candidate. But it is what it is, and I mean, all, you know, I don't talk about all that much because it's really kind of behind us now, and I think it's time to kind of look forward. Look ahead and see what we can do to get our republic back together and try to, you know, not only keep what freedom we have left, but to restore the freedom we've lost. And how do we do that going forward? So, you know, I've thrown my name in the hat again for the third time and been speaking all around the district and been a part of the forums and you know, very well received by the committee members and by many of them. And so I'm optimistic. I think I've got a real good shot in this committee selection. But it will just be about 86 people that decide who will represent the Republican Party. And, of course, the Democrats will choose their candidate, and then they will run in a general special election called for by the governor. And we don't know the date of that yet. He'll probably announce, he's got to announce that, you know, shortly after she resigns. So we'll be finding that out in the next few days when that will be. But anyway, I, you know, again, I'm persisting and staying in there and still talking about the issues that I think most conservatives, constitutionalists care about, and we'll continue to do that.
Okay. Now, just, we have listeners from all over the state, so just lay out the basics of the 8th District for the folks that are listening.
Well, it runs from Jefferson County to south of St. Louis, kind of follows I-44 down to Wright County and kind of jogs down to Ava and then hits the Missouri line on the Missouri-Arkansas line on the south and then goes all the way, includes all of the Boot Hill over to the Mississippi River and then back up to Jefferson County. So it's 30 counties. It's a huge district. It's about 5 hours to drive across it. I've spent 4 and now 5 years driving across it, about 70,000 miles in my F-150 Ford, speaking at hundreds of events all across the district. And, you know, so we've, you know, a lot of us have worked very hard in this district to take this district back. And, you know, so I... no other candidate has really done that. Now we do have, you know, we do have a couple of candidates that have done statewide races, but nobody has campaigned in the 8th District more than me all across the 8th District. So that's an advantage that I've got. A lot of people know me. They know my positions. You know, there's 12, 13 candidates in this race. So it kind of, you know, it splits the vote up a whole bunch. And So anyone who's got a pretty solid base of support is, going to be in a position to make it through some voting. So we'll just have to see how that plays out. Of course, it'll depend on who gets in the final vote or two and how that all works. But I think, I'm definitely in the running here, and we have a shot.
Great. And now, before we get down to some specific issues, I want to get your feel for this committee thing, because, there is a move on nationally and even in Missouri now to do away with primaries completely and let this be kind of the way candidates are chosen in the future. That seems to me, as someone who's libertarian and not part of, from outside the parties looking in, to be, to have pros and cons. How do you feel about something like that?
Well, I haven't heard a lot about that, but I don't think I would be real in favor of that. I think probably the system we have now with primaries and then a general would probably be the best way I know of to go through that process.
Well, okay. Let's get down then. Let's start when we talk about specific issues with something that's probably as dear to the 8th district as anything, and that is the Farm Bill. Where do you stand on the Farm Bill? I know that Representative Emerson played that a little close to the vest there toward the end. And the Farm Bill, tell us what the Farm Bill is real quick.
Well, the Farm Bill is basically the places where, place a lot of people get their, SNAP money, their food stamps, a lot of the social programming. And also, that's a huge chunk of the Farm Bill, which I'm opposed to all that being in, a part of the Farm Bill. I think it should be handled separately. But, all the farm programming and subsidies and all that are part of the Farm Bill. I mean, it's a massive bill. There's a lot in there. Like I've said and said the other day in Cape Girardeau at the forum, I think we have to transition away from government trying to solve every problem and subsidize everything all across the country. We don't have the money to do that, and I don't think it's worked very well.
Okay, but you would favor a slower backing away, not just shut off the spigot completely, but a slow backing out of
a transition, a transition out of that, and I I'm a farmer myself, and I think I know farmers well enough to know that they want to get their money out of the market. Now, the Farm Bill as it currently stands hurts me a whole lot in my business. I'm in livestock production, beef cattle.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing in the Farm Bill for beef producers. They subsidize grain producers, and also the ethanol situation that they've been involved with. That actually has hurt, the beef producers' prices, pretty greatly. So, this is kind of the problem with a lot of these kind of things, where the government jumps into these markets and manipulates them. There's winners and there's losers, and I'm a free market kind of a guy. But there's a lot of issues that farmers face. We have a lot of agencies breathing down our necks, a lot of environmental issues, and things like that that affect us. So it's complicated, but I've talked before, we have trade deals that really haven't helped us, and we have had a consolidation in agriculture in our marketing that has really hurt us. We have so few people that are handling our grains and so few people that are handling our livestock markets and things like that we really need almost have an antitrust situation where we need to break these markets up and open them up and get free market competition back into our markets and also address, trade agreements and access to markets that have been hurting us instead of helping us.
Exactly. Now, I've noticed, and I don't do the grocery shopping in my house generally, but I have noticed that I'm paying almost twice as much for a pound of beef as I was this time 2 years ago, and I'll almost guarantee you aren't getting twice as much for a pound of beef, are you?
No, and that's, you know, again, that's another frustration. Part of that, I think farmers should be able to direct market much more than they can, consumer to consumer.
Right.
And the government has really gotten in and regulated that to death, where, you know, for me to direct market my beef to somebody, I have to have it government inspected. There's a whole bunch of hoops I have to jump through. And so they've really consolidated a lot of the marketing so people can't do those kinds of things. And I think that's wrong. I think we should be able to have direct consumer to consumer marketing, you know, where it doesn't enter commerce, but you just sell it to a neighbor or sell it to some friends or whatever. And I think, you know, that's, you know, we're really kind of being starved off the reservation here. You know, people out in the country, we produce a good product, but all the middlemen and the market situation is really all working against us and keeps our prices low. And the end product is priced very high, and we continue to lose producers here in this country, and we just are importing, you know, like crazy, more and more all the time to continue to drive our producers out of business. And you know, something's got to change. We need people producing our food in this country.
Absolutely. I mean, for a country that used to be the breadbasket of the world, to be importing so much food is absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion.
Exactly. And you know, who does that benefit? It benefits the multinational corporations and the big, marketers. Nobody's fighting for the little guy and fighting for free markets. And I think that needs to change.
And you are a free market guy. I mean, tell me what your take is on free markets in general. I mean, you're gonna represent us in Washington D.C. What is your take on how? I mean, you can't imagine that the government gets completely out of the market.
Well, you know, does there need to be some oversight? Probably. Of course, we would have to debate exactly, you know, what kind of oversight would be. But, you know, we have a situation now that we have bureaucrats that don't even know which end of a cow does what, that are deciding, you know, how we're going to, do whatever we do on the farm. I mean, they have no idea. We see our property rights are threatened all the time, and we have endangered species acts. We've had a couple of them here in Missouri that have the potential to greatly impact farmers in southern Missouri in this district. We have, Sculpin over there in Perry County, Missouri, on the east side of the district that's going to have a huge impact over there. We have the big salamander in our rivers over here that put on the endangered species list, and that's going to affect all the watersheds over here in the Ozark region. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we're being impacted by, but we have very little say about, and I think that really needs to change. I mean, another thing that's breathing down our neck right now is the animal identification program. They're doing the final rulemaking on that, and that's a program I fought for years where they force you to register your farm and then, you know, get your premise ID number and then, you know, do your RFID chipping of all your animals. And it's not just cattle. It'll be, you know, pretty much everything that's raised on the farm. And, you know, it's going to be extremely expensive. And guess whose money, guess whose pocket the money's going to come out of? It's going to come out to a large extent the producer's pocket. And frankly, there's not a lot of money in our pockets anymore. You know, with, one reason beef prices are so high is we've had devastating droughts. We've had grain prices and hay prices that are just astronomical. And even though, you know, beef cattle are, their prices are pretty high right now, you can't recover your feed costs. And, you know, even on my farm, I'm grazing what pasture, what little pasture I have left into the ground. We've kind of not had some snowfall, so I'm taking it down to the dirt. So I hope my hay will get me through the winter. I think maybe it will, but, you know, I've had to sell about a third of my cattle and sell all my calves early, way early, to get them off the cows, to take the pressure off my, you know, my grass stock. So, you know, I know everybody's going through this. So even though we have sky-high cattle prices, you know, a lot of people don't even have cattle. So,
right.
You know, the dairy industry, which I was a part of for years, has just been devastated over the last 30 years. I mean, we've just lost dairy after dairy after dairy, and then this situation just drove them out of the ones that are left in mass. So I don't, you know, I guess we can import our food because, our, you know, there's not a lot of people producing, you know, especially in the livestock. Now, the grain farmers are doing pretty good, the ones that can make a crop. But, again, they've been, you know, devastated with these droughts, too, you know, the ones that don't have irrigation. So it's a precarious situation where agriculture's at. But, again, I don't think it's the job of the government to jump in and guarantee everybody a price. I think they need to guarantee them or work on, not necessarily guarantee, but work on providing a level playing field that's fair for everybody and where they can get their money out of the markets. And you know, that's what I'm a believer in.
And get some of the costly regulation out of it. I mean,
get the regulations out, exactly. I mean, it's just hordes of regulators that, you know, make way too much money sitting around figuring out a new way to regulate everybody.
Exactly. And that's, you know, we hit on one of the things that we're going to come back to after the break, when one of the things we talk about is constitutionally limited government. But we have an entire branch of government that is answerable to nobody making all these laws now. You know, I mean, it's almost as though you don't even need a legislature anymore because you've got all these lawmakers sitting in dark offices somewhere that nobody knows who they are and that don't answer to anybody, just basically making laws.
Exactly. With no, you know, our legislators, our elected officials don't even know what they're doing.
That's right.
What was there, over 5,000 new final rules on the federal level last year that impact businesses? I mean, over 5,000 new regulations that, you know, there's no elected official can keep up with all of that. It's completely out of control.
Okay, folks, we got to take a break here real quick. We're going to come back and we're going to talk to Bob about taxes, about Constitution, and about we can't get away without in this environment without talking about guns a little bit. So you give us a call, 347-677-1835, and get involved in this.
I'm here with Dr. Brian Ray of the National Home Education Research Institute, and we have great news for the folks here in St. Louis, Missouri. Dr. Ray is coming to St. Louis on January 31st, Thursday evening at 7 p.m. He'll be at the Family Vision Library in St. Peter's. Dr. Ray is the nation's leading most authority on homeschool research, and he's coming here to share some information that he has on some important topics. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Ray.
Hey, you're welcome. It's good to be here again.
So, Dr. Ray, you know, you've been in St. Louis before. You've been here. A welcome guest here on Culture Vigilante. Tell me, what can the folks expect to hear from you on the 31st?
I think I just want to give people a chance to hear about what's going on. There are a lot, you know, homeschooling keeps growing. People know that. It's a serious choice now. I would say, I wouldn't call it mainstream, but it is an opportunity for mainstream America. However, at the same time, even though we talk about it as free, legal, all that in every state, I think there are there's an increasing number of academics, scholars, professor types who really are irritated about it. They have angst about it, and I think we're seeing more attacks on home education. And these people affect policymakers. I want to talk about that a little bit at the meeting.
Absolutely, because education reform is a big topic here in Missouri, and Missouri homeschoolers need to understand how policy affects them as homeschoolers. It's not just about public education. What goes on in the public education realm affects the homeschooling realm, and they need to be in tune with that. Will you be able to address some of those issues?
Absolutely. If people just sit back and think, okay, we're free, it's just fine. If that's the attitude of people who are considering home-based education or homeschoolers, they're in for a big surprise, and things are going to get rough in the next several years. I mean, that's why people have to know, you know, what are common core standards? How might that influence private education? You know, what happens at the state level with tax-funded education, and how does that affect the thinking of policymakers and what they might do the next time around when somebody proposes a law to control, you know, control homeschoolers more? You think you're free, but you've got to stay on your toes, and you've got to know what these people are thinking.
And it just becomes more complicated every year. Things, it's not the simple homeschooling life of 10 years ago.
That's right. And I think also with the idea that a lot of homeschoolers have, that somehow they can get a little bit of free stuff from the public system and that it'll be okay at home. We've got to get rid of that idea too. And there is no free lunch. Whenever there's a piper out there, whoever's paying the piper calls the tune, and I think people have to be aware of that. I'm going to give some good news, and I'm going to give some challenges, and I'm going to get people thinking about some of these issues. And we'll also have a time for a little Q&A, and I'll try to make that exciting for the people, too.
Okay, great. That's just a little bit of what you can expect when you come to see Dr. Ray at the Family Vision Library. It's at 2020 Parkway Drive, St. Peter's, Missouri. Look for that information up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and there's also a Facebook page, An Evening with Dr. Ray. Look for it there. And we are looking forward to talking to you on January 31st, Dr. Ray.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it. I'll see a lot of people there.
Great. See you then.
So there you go, folks. That was Lisa with a little teaser. January 31st, Dr. Brian Ray is coming to the St. Louis area. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.com, .org, I'm sorry, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Check that out and be there. It's going to be an interesting evening. If you are into home education or into learning about what's gone wrong with education in total, go listen to Dr. Brian Ray. He is really the man in the know on Common Core and homeschooling issues and things that affect education at the state level and at the national level. So we are back here with Bob Parker. Bob Parker is a leading candidate in my mind to fill the seat that Joanne Emerson is vacating. We spent a bit talking about the farm bill and farming, and we talk about that because, you know, Missouri continues to be an agricultural state, and especially down there in the 8th, it's important to understand, Bob, that that while these kinds of things that we've talked about in the first segment are important to the 8th, that there are some people vying for this seat who aren't even in the 8th, who don't even live there, who don't know the people there, who aren't close to the 8th, and that's important, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think it's important to know what's going on in the 8th district. You know, I've lived here 35 years. Now, Pedro was from Kansas City. He's dropped out, so I don't think there's anybody that doesn't live in the 8th district that's still in the race that I know of.
Well,
so,
okay.
So I think the rest of them are, you know, from the 8th district. You know, many of them have been in politics for a long time. Many of them are attorneys. You know, I'm one of the very life and you know, private enterprise, and made a living primarily from my dairy farm for a number of years, and still in the ranching business, and you know, still have property, have a ranch here in southern Missouri. So, you know, I'm not a professional politician. I'm just somebody that got involved because I'm you know, very concerned about what's happening to our freedoms in our country. So, you know, but, you know, there are some, you know, pretty good folks running. And, but I feel, you know, I feel like I've got a real shot here in this race. The committee is going to make a selection, but, you know, of course, but the, you know, the committees, I've been working with the committees the last 5 years now, speaking at their events and meeting committee members. And a lot of the people on the committees are people that have been very, you know, part of my campaign, several of them. So, you know, we're going to see how it plays out.
Great. Okay, now, one of the things that, when I interviewed Ms. Emerson, she would not even talk to me about was the fair tax. Where are you? You know, fair taxation, quote unquote, is a key component of grassroots politics. Where are you on fair tax, or on a flat tax, or on a fairer tax system?
Well, I like I've said before, and I've read the fair tax book, talked to fair tax people. In general, I support doing away with the IRS. I support going to a consumption type tax and getting away from our tax structure like we have it now. So that's which is very similar to a fair tax kind of a thing. But there's some concerns about the fair tax as it's written now, the double taxation, I think, of services. I don't think that's fair. So there's some issues there that I think need to be looked at and worked out. But, I think we've got to get rid of the IRS and flatten out and broaden, you know, expand this tax into some kind of a consumptive sales tax. So that's where I'm at on that.
Okay.
Does that help?
No, that's fine. Yeah, I'm not. This hour is about you. It's not about me. So I'm just finding out where you're at on these things. You know, in Missouri, they're talking now quite strongly about getting this right to work passed in this session. How do you feel about something like that on a national level? For years, in my mind, a problem has been created by the government coming down on any side in this labor/owner/labor/management battle that's gone on since one human being started paying another. Where are you on these kind of right to work things?
Well, I support Right to Work in Missouri, and you know, I've tried to get the endorsement of National Right to Work. They refused to endorse me. Missouri Right to Work refused to endorse me, but I support what they're trying to do. So I'll continue to work on those kinds of things, especially in office. So very supportive of their efforts. We need Right to Work in Missouri.
Okay. Do you know the rest of the Missouri delegation up in the House? How familiar are you with the rest of the Missouri delegation up there?
The delegates in southern Missouri, I know all of them, pretty much all of them that represent the 30 counties in the 8th District. I know them very well. But as far as the rest of the delegation, I know some of them. Previously, before the campaign, we were up there quite a bit working on legislation and, speaking at committee hearings and things on various issues. But, when I got in the campaign, I just didn't have time to stay involved in going to Jeff City and working with the legislature in that way. So, I have a good relationship with, most of them here in southern Missouri. So,
no, my question really was went to all the way to Washington D.C. I mean, Long, Hartzler. How familiar are you with the rest of the Missouri folks in the House up there?
Well, I know Billy Long. I mean, actually, I showed my real estate business. I showed Billy Long property one day. We spent a day together running around, and I've seen him at some events and Lincoln Day events up around Springfield. Part of his at Lincoln Day events, his district overlapped in the same county, and we would speak at events. I know Billy. I haven't seen him for quite a while, Billy Long. Now, Vicki, I don't know. I don't know Vicki Hartford. I've never met Vicki. Well, I've seen her speak a little bit, but I don't know Vicki very well. But So, you know, not a lot of contacts there. Of course, you know, it's pretty hard as an outsider kind of candidate, you know, to get their ears. They're pretty busy.
Right. Okay. Tell the listeners here what limited government means to Bob Parker.
Well, you know, reading the Constitution doesn't take too long. A couple of hours, you can get a pretty good understanding of the Constitution, and it really talks pretty clearly about limiting the federal government and staying, you know, out of our lives in a whole lot of areas. So limited government to me means I'm not taxed to death. The government is not involved in micromanaging everybody's life and everybody's business. You know, limited government means that, you know, those things are left to the states. And likewise, I would prefer the states would stay out of my life as much as they can, you know, our state government. So I just really like freedom. I really like freedom. It seems like the farther we go, the bigger these agencies get, the bigger our government gets, and the farther removed our legislature or elected officials get from the people. And the special interests and the multinational corporations and everybody get, you know, are selecting our candidates and funding our candidates. And we just have a government that just grows and grows and grows nonstop. And the size of, you know, the people working for government just doesn't stop. And people seem to forget that it's the guys out there on the bottom that are working and trying to produce and farm and mine and manufacture that support all that. So, you know, that's kind of my view. It's a constitutional view. I think it's a view like our founders had of how this country should work. And I think by creating all these agencies, you know, the Department of Energy, the Department of Education, some of these other agencies, that they just... you know, Department of Homeland Security, I mean, creating the police state, and, you know, just it's just unreal what they've been doing, and you know, the MEAC report, those kinds of things that just, you know, are real scary with the direction our government's going. And, you know, these agencies kind of take on a life of their own, like we talked about before. And you know, I think that's wrong. I don't think that's what our founders envisioned, and I think we need to turn that around. It's not going to be easy to do.
Should we be transitioning, in your mind, to a government that where those agencies just don't even exist anymore?
I do. I think we have to take a hard look at a lot of those agencies and see if they even should exist.
Okay.
I think we need to get rid of the EPA. I mean, EPA did some good things, but I think the states could take care of those functions. You know, we have DNR in Missouri. You know, the problem now by these so many state agencies is they're tied in with the federal agencies, and they take money from the federal agencies to implement their programs, and that's really a problem, where the states really aren't represented anymore, that the state agencies just are another arm of the federal government.
Absolutely.
And that's a huge, huge problem. And, you know, the money just keeps pouring in through the grants and all these things that they really get their mandatory outcomes and in regulating everything to death. And I think we've got to seriously try to change the way our government works.
Federal government and marriage.
Well, I think marriage is between a man and a woman. You know, it's where I'm, you know, I mean, that's...
Federal government, though, in marriage.
Federal government in marriage. I mean, I think, you know, I think, I don't see where in the Constitution they're supposed to be involved in marriage, but...
Okay. Federal government and abortion.
Well, I think... I would like to turn around and repeal Roe v. Wade. I think, you know, I'm totally against abortion. I'm totally against destroying life after conception. So, I think that should be federally protected.
Okay. Now let's get to the big topic of the month here. Federal government and guns.
Well, I'm a, you know, huge supporter of the Second Amendment. Like, you know, the same spirit of our founders. We need the Second Amendment. We need our guns to, the Second Amendment wasn't about deer hunting. It wasn't about shooting ducks with an AR. it wasn't about those kinds of things. The Second Amendment was to empower the people to resist a tyrannical government. And that's clear by the writings of our founders, and that's why I believe it's still just as important now as it was then. I mean, I had a guy write on my Facebook page today, it's like, well, there's, you know, to think that you could resist tyranny with, small arms, I can't remember his exact wording, but, that's a crazy thought. But if you really study small arms and what they mean, small arms are really one of the most effective deterrents against tyranny and invasion because, you know, if everybody's armed, they've got to go door to door to take over a country. And that's one of the most costly things you can do is go door to door with an armed populace that's resisting. So, I like my freedom and I like my guns. And like the St. Louis Post-Dispatch quoted me, you know, I need more than 10 rounds to protect my freedom. So, you know, I'm not planning on giving up my 30 round clips or my AR or my dad's old shotgun or any of my stuff. I don't plan on giving them any of it.
What should the legislature be doing right now? And specifically, we're talking about the House of Representatives because we know what the condition of the other house is. What should the legislature be doing right now about debt?
About debt?
Yes, sir.
About debt in Missouri?
No. What should the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. be doing
Washington.
About this upcoming debt debate?
The debt limit increase, okay. Well, I've said with the other debt limit increases that we must get real cuts to spending and deal with a lot of these things we've been talking about tonight and use that as an opportunity to do that. And they just don't. You know, they're just able to be manipulated, I guess. And it gets down to the end, and they basically just kick the can down the road and continue to spend the money. And, I'm not for shutting down the government and everything else, but we've got to do something and be willing to do really whatever it takes to get this under control, because Obama and company don't seem to be stopping at all in this spending madness. And really both parties have been a part of the spending madness. So I would be for doing whatever it takes to get this spending cut, hard cuts in spending, and then also work on the things that are keeping our jobs continually being offshored and shut down here in the United States and try to reverse that and bring them back. And I don't see anything being done in Washington to address any of that.
Okay. You tell us now, just to wind down here, what the listeners out here can do to help you get to Washington, D.C. at this point? I mean, going to the ballot box and voting, that we're past that now. What can we do?
Well, every county has who will be voting in this selection process will be your county chair and vice chair that run the Republican Party. And then also each county has legislative districts in the House, and each one of those districts has a chair and a vice chair. So you can contact you're someone in your party, in the Republican Party in your county, and ask them who those people are, get their phone numbers, get their addresses, and, give them a call and ask them to support me or whatever candidate they want them to support. But that's, that will be the only input that they really have, and is just encouraging them to you know, hopefully support me. So it does make a difference, you know, because people are getting calls or getting emails from my supporters quite a bit, probably more from my supporters by far than anybody else in the lineup here. And so, you know, again, be friendly, be nice, be polite, be short and sweet, but just ask them to support Bob Parker in this run for Congress, and I think that will help.
All right, Bob. Well, thanks for spending time with us tonight, and I'm wishing you the best myself. Again, I'm not a Republican, never have been, but I generally end up, of course, as a Libertarian, voting on that side of the ticket. Right. I've been a follower of yours, and I backed you in the last one, and you're my guy in this one, even though I'm not in the 8th. Now, for us who are not in the 8th, do our county people don't have any say, do they? I'm down there in Greene County, so it's only the counties.
No, you've got to be only the counties in the 8th district.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it'll be only the counties in the 8th district, and yeah, anybody out of the 8th district will have no influence probably on committee people unless they're elected officials or, you know, maybe somebody that is known across the state or something. I mean, that of course would have some influence, but just your average guy calling one of the committee people in the 8th district probably not going to do much good.
Okay.
It's a historic process here in the 8th district. I mean, we've had the Emersons in there for, you know, 30 years. So
right.
To have a seat open up in this way is...
Okay. It would have been better if we could have done this legitimately. Not that the way we're going to do it now is illegitimate, but it would have been better if we could have done this in the primary. But that wasn't to be, and so this is the way it's going to be done.
Right.
You folks in the 8th, get a hold of your committee people. Let them know what your preferences are. Bob, thanks for being with us. Anything else you want to say to the folks before we cut out?
Well, it's been great being with you tonight, Dave, and we'll just, continue to, regardless of what happens, continue to fight to get this country back on track and get it back to following the Constitution and the principles of our founders. And, hopefully, no matter what happens, we can all work together to see that America, you know, we take this country back, and that's what we're about.
Absolutely, and for the grassroots folks out here in Missouri, you know, when you finally get up there to Washington, D.C., will you let us call you once in a while and touch base with you and see how things are going up there?
Well, you bet. I mean, I'll be back hopefully speaking at tea parties and county committees and, meeting with the folks. That's what I'm all about. That's who I am. I'll never get away from that. I want, you know, people need to be able to have access to their elected officials, and I strongly believe in that.
Great. So we'll be calling you in Washington, D.C. here in a couple of months and touching base with you and see how things are going up there and finding out what we need to be doing to help out.
That would be great, Dave.
Thanks for being with us, Bob. We enjoyed it.
Thank you. God bless you. See ya.
You too, sir. Good night. Okay, many, many thanks. That was Bob Parker, who's my bet to be the replacement for Joanne Emerson. I know it's not Joanne Emerson's favorite, or she would have just stepped aside back when she had a chance and let that happen. But this is the way the wheel turns. And you folks out there in the 8th, you need to be in there, and you need to be the ones doing the turning on that wheel. Get a hold of your county people. Find out what the process is for getting a hold of the people who are going to be making these votes, and do that. And let's get Bob Parker up there and representing real people representing real people. That's what we need. We're going to take a quick break here again. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about what's coming up.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic. Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
All right, we're back. We had a great, great night with Bob Parker. It was really fun to talk to Bob again. I really enjoyed it. We're hoping for the best there. And I guess we'll know here probably in another month who's going to represent us in Washington, D.C. in that seat that Joanne Emerson is leaving behind to go lobby some more. Tomorrow night, one of our favorites, Cynthia Davis, will be back with her show Homefront at 8 o'clock. She's going to talk to Paul Cruz. He's going to talk about homelessness in the United States and what the government can and should be doing about that problem. On Wednesday night, always, it's great to hear from Lisa Payne Nager, the culture vigilante. And speaking of Lisa and the culture vigilante, don't forget for a moment that Dr. Brian Ray is coming around to St. Louis area on the 31st of January to talk about homeschooling and education in general and how the federal government is messing that situation up quite a bit. That's the 31st of January. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. And find out all about that, when, where, how. That's Dr. Brian Ray. He's coming. And I want to thank you folks for bearing with me. I'm now finally over this thing that's been in my chest and throat for the last 4 weeks. You know, the older you get, the harder these things are to shake off. I'm finally getting over it. I'm not coughing all through tonight's show. I'm a little hoarse, as you can tell. And my voice is a little strained, but we've made it through tonight. On Thursday night, my friend and yours, Kevin Harned, the hillbilly himself, is along with some more hillbilly logic. And then on Monday night, we will get back to Constitution 101. We're going to pick up where we left off. We're going to pick up with the 13 colonies. We're going to take them up to the Stamp Act and the atrocities that led up to the first violence between the British and the American colonists. Then in weeks following that, we're going to go through the Civil War. We're going to talk about how the South was involved in the Civil War the Revolutionary War. And what we're trying to do here is we're trying to lay the groundwork for all of the real history that became the experiences, that became the fears, that became the hopes that the founders had when they sat down to write this Constitution. And through those experiences, fears, and hopes, we can finally see clearly, without all the legalese that has been propagated in the last 250 years, what these folks wanted, what they intended, what they meant to say when they said what they said. It's become so distorted, looking backward through the prism of time. We talk about intent. We talk about intent in 2013 with all of the mud, with all of the hazy air that's been generated between that point and this point. And so we really don't know, looking backward, what this intent was. It is clear, though, when we start at the beginning, and we did start at the beginning, we did start in Europe with some people getting on a boat with some hopes and some dreams and some desires. And we brought them here, and we struggled through that first winter or two. We dealt with the Native Americans in the area. We dealt with the religious issues in the area. We dealt with the trade issues in the area. We dealt with the differences between the colonies. And now we're going to talk about how differences begin to erupt between the colonies, which all of whom at this point in time considered themselves loyal Englishmen, and how that relationship became strained as we moved toward the War of the Revolution. And then finally, when we get done with all of that, all of the history that shaped what these men were who gathered at that Constitutional Convention, then we can talk about the Constitution itself that came out of that convention and what the intent of those writers were. That's pretty much a wrap-up of where we're going in the next week with Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Dave, and our thanks again to Bob Parker for spending the hour with us tonight. It was fun. It was enlightening. And I hope you folks will do your part to get a hold of those folks who are going to make this decision and let them know how you feel about it. This is Monday night. As always on Monday night, it is the hour of truth. We've had an hour of truth, and now we're done. We want to wish you a good night. We love you all. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.